Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Sometimes there's wisdom in knowing just when to give up. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today's Friday, which means it's Free for All Friday here on the podcast. I talk about whatever I am interested in. During the week, Monday through Thursday, we talk apologetics and theology. I'll share rebuttal videos to anti-Catholic videos on YouTube. But on Friday, I just get to cut loose and have some fun. And I came across this article at Reason.com by Ronald Bailey, who is like their chief science correspondent. He's a really smart guy, very aware of the scientific literature. I don't agree with him on everything. I know a few years back, he had a bit of a dispute between Patrick Lee, who is my old professor at the Franciscan University of Steubenville. I think he was the chair. He probably still is the chair. He was back then the chair of philosophy and bioethics at Franciscan University of Steubenville. Pat Lee is awesome. He's just a fun guy, a smart guy. He kind of looks like Pierce Brosnan, James Bond. You know, he's just a great guy, very smart. He's written a lot of great stuff on abortion and philosophy. So he and Robert George were engaged in a back and forth with Bailey on the personhood of early embryos, and Bailey disagreed with them on that, though it was really more of a philosophical dispute than a scientific one. But otherwise, a lot of things that Bailey writes, I find it to be well-researched. I think that he's balanced, and so I appreciate the perspective he offers. And so in this recent article that is posted day July 2nd at Reason.com, Bailey is summarizing and giving his opinion on a recent study that said, well, here's what we need to do to combat global warming. So the study, let's see if I can pan down here and find it. It was by a team of European researchers at the University of Leeds. So I think the study name, I'll bring that up here in a second, socioeconomic conditions for satisfying human needs at low energy use. So the idea here is that people are concerned about global warming. And I know the people who listen to my channel, to my podcast, guys probably have a lot of different views on climate change. You know, there's probably a fair number of people who listen to me who don't believe climate change is real or don't think humans are causing it. And I'm not going to get into that debate today. Though, me, I'm not on one side or the other. I think that climate change is something to be concerned about. I think humans have something to do with it. But I don't think there's going to be an apocalypse in the next 12 years because of it. And taking drastic measures in response to climate change, we just saw that with the pandemic. You know, and I cannot wait until all of the scientific research comes in the next 5 to 10 years and shows that most of the things that government did to try to slow the spread of COVID-19 were ineffective or counterproductive. And they were done because of alarmism, because people were spooked. You had studies that were saying that 2 million people were going to die of COVID-19 if nothing was done. Though those studies assumed that people are idiots and will not change their behavior in the midst of a pandemic. When in reality, when people heard about the pandemic, they were already voluntarily social distancing and taking precaution measures. So I think in the grand scheme of things, the lockdowns that were done are going to show that they were ineffective at best and counterproductive at worst in promoting human flourishing. So that's what I'm concerned about with global warming, with climate change, that even if climate is changing, even if humans are involved, we could have a similar situation with COVID-19 where the cure is worse than the disease, where the solution is worse than the problem. And that seems to be the case in this article that Bailey has written critiquing this new study. So the headline of the article says, "To stop climate change, Americans must cut energy use by 90%, live in 640 square feet, and fly only once every 3 years," says study. So I think this is a good example of solution being worse than the problem, that when people talk about what will happen, not the alarmists, not people in the media or politicians who will say the world will literally end in 12 years, like 3 years ago, so what is it now, 9 years? They'll talk about increase in natural disasters, loss of global gross domestic product, economic contractions. But no one, to my mind, among scientists who study climate change has said that climate change will bring about an apocalyptic scenario where we will only have 10% of the energy we once had, people will have to live in 600 square foot houses. So I'm not aware of any scientists saying that if climate change is left unchecked, we will live with only 10% of energy in 600 square foot houses. This, what they're asking us to do, and I'm not saying there's no government asking this yet, you know, but what some scientists are asking for, and all it takes is one. Remember, it was just some guy in England saying 2 million people are going to die, and suddenly everybody does all of these ridiculous protocols for COVID that didn't actually help anything. I remember in a restaurant, I had a family, friends, they were a party of seven. They have five children. They went to a restaurant, and you're only allowed to have five people at a table, and every table has to be 6 feet apart. And so they went to the restaurant, and they pushed two tables together so that the parents could eat with their five children. And the manager said, "You can't do that. The policy says the tables have to be 6 feet apart." And the mother said to the manager, "We're in the same household. It doesn't matter." And he said, "It does matter. That's the policy. If you don't like it, you can leave." So what people do, this is why you have to think for yourselves. Think for yourselves. Now, that doesn't mean that you are your own God or something like that. I recognize God exists. Jesus is my Lord, and I submit to him. So I'm not the God of my own world or anything like that. But at the same time, I think through things. If something makes sense for me to submit to a rule laid down by a proper authority, I'm going to do that. So I'm Catholic because the rules do make sense to me. Did I follow all the COVID protocols? No, because a lot of them didn't make sense to me. So my point in that digression, because that's something that clearly doesn't make sense, doesn't matter, rule says so, we'll do it. That's what terrifies me about bureaucrats taking suggestions like this from scientists and making them irrational, inflexible rules that you have to follow, because if you don't, they will send a form to your house saying that you're being fined, and if you don't pay the fine, a man with a gun will come to your home and take you to jail, and you lose your home, you'll lose your family and your freedom. I'm not making this up. These things happened during the pandemic where people followed inflexible, irrational rules because some politician said so. So I am concerned when there are these suggestions saying we have to basically destroy our standard of living that we have achieved in the last 150 years to try to mount a solution to a problem that probably is not going to work anyway. So let me give you a few excerpts from here. It says, so as you know, 90% of energy gone. We're going to have to live. Later in the article, it says you'd have to use the same energy usage as somebody in Bolivia. You know, you maybe a little hand crank thing, have your little black and white TV going. I don't know, but it'd be rough. Travel should in any case be limited to 3,000 and 10,000 miles per person annually. Keep in mind that the average car on the lower end puts in 10,000 miles a year. So you're just never going to be really leaving your house, I suppose. And then, of course, what about people who deliver the food and all the things to you that you need? Well, you don't need things. You have to give all that stuff up. Referencing earlier sustainability studies, the people in the study argue that human needs are sufficiently satisfied when each person has access to the energy equivalent of 7,500 kilowatt hours of electricity per capita. This is how much energy the average Bolivian uses. Americans use 80,000 kilowatt hours annually per capita. With respect to transportation and physical mobility, the average person would be limited to using the energy equivalent of 16 to 40 gallons of gasoline per year. People are assumed to take one short to medium haul airplane trip every 3 years or so. So try to think of your electric bill, right? And you have to take out the taxes and the fees they make you pay. What would you have to do? Let's say your electric bill is $200 a month. How would you have to live to only get that down to $20 a month? Maybe you could have some lights on. You couldn't run appliances. You couldn't run dishwashers. You couldn't run refrigerators. You definitely couldn't have air conditioning. That's for sure. But that's what, I mean, they probably don't have air conditioning in Bolivia. But that's, imagine going back. This is essentially taking us back to the nascent stages of the development of electricity in the modern world. And that's how we'd want to live. Could we have hospitals? Could we have schools? But the idea here is we have to do this to avoid what will happen with climate change. But I would say, is it really that bad? Let me talk about a few other things of the study, what they recommend. Calories would be 2,100 calories a day. No, that's not that bad. Though it says on average we eat 3,000 calories. At least they're not saying, you know, 1,000 calories or something like that. But the clothing allowance is interesting. You get 9 pounds of clothes a year. Clothes may be washed 20 times annually. It is a brave new smelly world that these researchers want. The good news is, but still you find a way to mess it up, everyone over the age of 10 gets a mobile phone and each household has a laptop. So we got to make sure that kids have their cell phone. So what's even worse is I could even be okay. I can't be okay. But, you know, taking away all of our technology, at least we'll have each other. Maybe families will grow stronger. No, these scientists still say every kid over 10 needs to get a cell phone. It's absolutely madness. And that's what needs to be done for them to limit global warming, prevent the 1.5 Celsius degree temperature increase. But here's the real kicker. When you go to this chart from the study looking at decent living standards, they claim that on 7,500 kilowatt hours, one tenth of what Americans use, your needs can be met. Well, here is this average use by gigajoules per person. Gigajoules. I always thought it would be gigawatts. 1.21 gigawatts. Gigawatts? Marty, got to get you back to the future. So you look here at what people use per person. USA is right at the top. Canada, you know, Canada is using more electricity than we are. Canada, USA, Finland, Norway, Russia. These are developed Western countries, not Western geography-wise, but just their place in the world, economics, gross domestic product, things like that. Though they say that in Russia, decent living standards are not met. I am not surprised by that. I still want to visit Russia, though. It seems like a really cool country. I wouldn't want to Russia's like California in so many ways. It's a beautiful place in many areas, but I would not want to live there because I value my freedom. So it shows here that the vast majority of developed countries use more energy than would be allowed underneath this scenario to reduce global warming, nearly all of them. And all of the ones that do use less energy per person, that would be Vietnam, Zambia, India, Ghana, they don't have decent living standards there. So I would just say, yeah, that this approach, it just doesn't make sense, because the solution is worse than the problem we're trying to address. And also there's a question of futility. Sometimes if there's a problem that's bad, but you can't solve it, you have to just accept you can't solve it. Maybe you have to learn to live with it. So like with COVID-19, there were people who were saying, we can't stop masks and social distancing until the virus has been eradicated. Are you mad? This isn't like smallpox or something like that. This is an endemic respiratory virus that is going to be around forever, like other respiratory viruses. All you can do is just have enough people develop immunity in a variety of ways to prevent it from overwhelming the hospitals, which was the first. That was the whole point, right? Remember March of 2020, when we were told that the goal was to keep people from dropping dead as they waited for respirators at the hospitals? And now there are so few cases, the hospitals, they're fine. But now the goal is we have to make sure nobody gets sick from this. It doesn't make sense. But there's a futility there. Obviously, you can't eradicate a respiratory virus like COVID-19, at least in how it's spread so far. You're not going to be able to do that. So let's take this scenario of climate change. Can we stop the increase? Let's say, just to some people listening, I don't believe in climate change. I don't believe humans are involved. Well, look, just if you're talking with someone, just say, let's grant, for the sake of the argument, that there is climate change and humans are involved and it'll have negative consequences. The fact of the matter is, what are we going to do? I don't see how we're going to do it. Here is a chart of global emissions in 2017. Okay, it's a little weirdo pie chart here. Just gross global emissions, as in, you know, the most per country. The one that is producing the most global emissions is China, 27.2%. United States is producing probably the second amount, 14.6%. India, 6.8%. Russia, 4.7%. Japan at 3.3%. Though it's interesting when you compare it, because when you judge responsibility for producing CO2 emissions, you can talk about the gross output, like just the amount of CO2 a country outputs. But also there's the per capita you have to look at. So you look here, there's Canada, 1.6%. It seems like Canada is not as big of a producer of CO2. But then when you go down to the per capita, Canada is actually at 15.6%, right behind the U.S. is 16.2%. So the idea here is that, well, let's say Canada, for example, is interesting. They don't produce a lot of CO2, but because they're a modern developed Western country, because they're geographically sparse, they have few people, but a lot of land and a lot of mining, a lot of energy production, a lot of forestry, things like that. Their per capita usage in Canada is similar to the U.S. And so the U.S. is not the most when it comes to gross output. Neither is it the most per capita. Other countries that are more than us, at least this is back in 2017, maybe it's shifted. Australia, you know which ones per capita have a lot? Arab developed Middle Eastern countries. Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, and Qatar. I think that's how it's Q-A-T-A-R. I believe I've always thought it was Qatar, but I think it's pronounced Qatar, Q-A-T-A-R. And that makes sense because these countries have a relatively small population. They're very developed, and they love to run their air conditioning like nobody's business. And I cannot blame them for doing that. So even if we in the U.S. adopt this and we totally drop our living standards to so that we join, you know, one of these other low per capita or low production countries, we get down to Japan's level or something like that. What does it matter if China keeps building coal power plants and says, I don't care, not going to comply? Then it becomes a point we should just learn to live with climate change instead of taking futile steps to stop it, if those steps include destroying the standard of living we have to actually have people's decent needs to be able to be met. And now, I think we should take steps. But the problem is a lot of people, I've talked about this on a previous podcast, I may do a video on it in the future. One I think would be good is build nuclear power plants. Get us to nuclear. France, 70% of French power is nuclear. And guess what? Here they are on the chart. 1%. France is 1%. But when it comes to the per capita usage, I don't even see them here in the top. Germany's at 9.7. I don't even think they're here on the per capita ranking. Because nuclear is a great way to make power, and it doesn't produce CO2 emissions. It's really clean and it's really safe. Well, what about Chernobyl? If you don't believe in nuclear power because of Chernobyl, that's like saying I'm never going to get on a cruise ship because of the Titanic, and I'm never going to fly in an airplane because of TWA Flight 800 or something like that. We've learned a lot since then. Nuclear power is one of the safest forms of power in the world. It's way safer than coal, which kills thousands of people a year through air pollution. People die every year putting solar panels on roofs. They fall off roofs. Solar panels kill people. They're on par with nuclear reactors when it comes to safety, except nuclear reactors are way more efficient, reliable, and produce more power. The problem is you have people for whom environmentalism is a religion, not a sensible worldview, and so they just hate anything that's nuclear, which I don't understand. So hey, I hope that was helpful for you all. If you want to read the article for yourself, I'll put a link to it below, Ronald Bailey at Reason Magazine, and then the chart as well. But so yeah, when it comes to global warming, I say I'm fine with solutions to the problem, but not solutions that are worse than the problem we may or may not be facing. So thank you guys so much. And hey, I hope you have a very blessed week.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.